tooth's a bit of a distraction, G.
I chipped my freaking tooth this week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. None of the boys need me in the mouth when we're sparring. And he didn't even have any pads of shit.
And where was your mouth more aggressive?
Makes me look like my cousins or something.
That's racist.
Kia ora, everyone. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, yeah, it's going. It's going.
We're really blessed to be joined by the beautiful Kimaya today. How did we meet? Like some fucking social media.
I think it was from following the radio station.
Oh, yeah. That's right. It's from Pacific Way. Do you know what? I actually reached out to them and we just moved here a couple of years ago. I was like, excuse me, do you know where we can get some island food? Because we're really hungry for it. And that's how we connected.
Oh.
Just asking about food.
Wait, I'm trying to remember how we connected as well. Because yes. I think I saw you for the first time and when it was at your Saamanga.
Yeah,
which was cool.
When was that? Last year. Yeah, last January. Year, Feb.
You had your moko then, didn't you?
Yeah, I just got my moko. Oh,
and that's why I remembered.
Yeah, yeah.
She got it while I think it was the second week.
Yeah.
Because we took about 3 weeks to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she turned up. She was like, oh, I got to get it done today. And I'm like, ow, okay.
Right. Go in peace.
Yeah, that was weird to come back and like see each other for the first time. You know, it's usually something you'd experience together, but to see each other was, yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like a, oh my God, beautiful moment. It was quite intimidating, actually. It was quite.
Yeah, you're like, surprise. Or yeah. No, like, I'm back.
Yeah. And because
you're still going.
I think the space and like, you know, when you're getting guard, like it's a very, like quite a serious sort of space in how you hold yourself. So I couldn't be too like out there with myself and had to hold myself. But anyway, yeah. But the reason you're here is because I've always been inspired by the way that you share, not only on social media, but your involvement in the community. Just hearing you, how you show up, and I love your Monday night sex chats.
They're a vibe.
And your Sunday worship, and you're trying to find the best bun me in Brisbane. But we've shared a bit of time together as well. And just what is your story? Where did you grow up? Where were you born?
Okay, first of all, so I started following Kimaya after I started following Pacific Wave. And then I remember I was at, I took a young person, I was doing youth work at the time, and I took a young person to his game at Goodna.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
And I was sitting there with these boys, like, I didn't even know them, but they grew up in the same area I grew up in, sitting there, and I saw him, like, fuck, that's Kimaya. I didn't know how to say your name at the time. I was like, hey, Kimaya. But in her face, she done that Ingo Ingo face at me. I was like, what? It's Kimaya. I was like, oh, okay, hi.
I'll never forget again.
No, don't beat me.
I remember that. Now that
we know how to say your name properly, Kimaya. Yeah, where did you grow up?
Oh, right. Thanks, guys, anyway, for having me. Growing up, so I am Māori Samoan. So my mum's Māori. She, Evelyn Matehaere Ruha Hall, and she is Te Whanau Apanui and Ngāti Porou. And just because of who we are, I think I'll just acknowledge my grandparents for a little bit. Her dad is Muturangi Witi Kātai Ruha, and her mom is Ripeka Tangihaere Jews. And then dad's side, he's Samoan, he's from Iwa Savai, and his name is Mawala Iwao Pule Amea Karifi, and his mom is Senatima, well, Tuifa Asisena Senatima Sio, and his dad is Siaki Karifi. So, I'm the oldest of five. My dad and my mom were together for a little bit, had me and my sister, and then they broke up when I was four. For some reason, they thought it was cool to split us up. So, I went with dad to Samoa. My sister stayed in New Zealand with my mom. I was there for a little bit, and then they realized, oh, crap, we shouldn't split them up. And then I went back and lived with my mom. And I think I kind of black out in my memories for a good 2 years. I don't know if it's just it's either a self-defense thing where it's just pushed that all to the side, or I don't know. Anyway, fast forward, we moved up to the Hokianga when I was seven. And that in itself was a huge change because we went from living in Auckland and my mum having like a nice car and we lived in this nice house in Henderson to living in Weka Weka, which if you've ever been there before, it's like a crusty little place in the rainforest, and the shop is the gas station, that GAS station, and it's like the post office and the little shop that you go to, and it's right next to the pub, and you just go to those two shops, and that's it, the pub and the gas station. Yeah, so we went to this tiny little rural town where my mom for a while was trying to keep her car tires clean and not run over any possums, and it was just a strange transition. Yeah, and so we went around the Hokianga for a while. Mom was a substitute teacher, so we changed schools. Well, I changed schools 13 times and from my whole school life, from primary up to high school, just to follow wherever the work was. And yeah, I got to give it up to my mom because she's such a workhorse. Like, she was solo for a long time, and she just showed us there's just no excuses. You just have to show up and put the work in, and if you don't have the money, then find a way. And, you know, full credit to my mom. As far as I know, it was all legal. Because I remember one time, I think I must have been about 12, and she wanted to rent this place that was closer to the school, so it was easier for me and my sister to get to school while she worked at a different school. And she ended up working out a deal with the landlord that she nominated all of us, volunteered all of us, that we would pick thistles from his paddocks around the house, and that would take money down from the rent. So she ended up getting the rent at a reduced price, and every day after school we were picking thistles.
Every day.
Yeah. Oh, so that was just...
That's cool.
Yeah. It was that and what is that other weed? Can't remember it. Not gorse. It's like a green and it's got the yellow flowers on it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that stuff. So, yeah, we're doing a lot of those kind of jobs for people, and Mum was like the queen of barter. So she would always be helping out on other people's farms, and we'd always be kicking shit because we're like, we're always out, like, helping that guy move his cattle and helping that person do this, and why are we even doing this? And she's like, because this is what you do as a community. You help out your neighbours, and then one day we might then need their help, and we won't have to ask because they know that we've got each other's backs. And I was like, yeah, but... Yeah, so I just felt like we grew up quite a hard life. Me and my sister, like, one of our places that we stayed at, it was like concrete, corrugated iron roof, like there was no power. The toilet was outside. It was a flush toilet though, but it had no roof on top. So,
give and take.
Yeah. So it would suck if it was raining because we'd be on the toilet with the umbrella and either with a torch or the candle and, yeah, trying to go toilet in the rain with no power. We had a TV though. Like, Mum liked to still try and make things homely. So we had a little black and white box TV and it ran off the car battery. And I think I must have been about 9 or 10 when that was happening. And it was all open plan. And one time, so every school holidays, me and my sister would go down to Auckland and we would go and visit our Samoan family. So Dad was still living in Samoa at the time, but we would still maintain contact with them. Mum was real cool about it. One of his brothers, my Uncle Siaki, who lives in Melbourne, she just trusted him like a little brother. And so she'd send us to him every school holidays. And, yeah, that would be our dose of Auckland. And that all mock us because we were like the farm Maldives who were excited because we got to drink Coke and, like, do cool stuff, like go movies and just have a break in the city. But I feel like those visits, as cool as they were keeping in touch with our Samoan side, it also made me feel like realize how disconnected I was from my Samoan side, because every time we went down, we just didn't understand anything they were saying. And they might say something to us in Samoan, but then would only speak English to us, but speak Samoan to the rest of our cousins. And like, as much as it was them trying to make us feel involved, I felt more distant because it was like there, it was always special stuff for us because we couldn't understand or we weren't part of that family dynamic. And then going back up north, I was ungrateful as being on this beautiful farm and like having fresh veggies and fruit like right there in front of us and fresh milk from our cow and fresh meat and all this abundance of stuff up there. But I was just like, there's no footpaths. I was like, it stinks because there's no footpaths here. And Like, we don't have a shower. We've only got a bath. And our bath is one of those huge, big, you know, a bath that everyone wants, those big old school ones. But I was just like, no, but I want a shower because everyone in Auckland has a shower.
And everyone in Auckland is like, I want a bath.
Yeah, legit. And they'll be saying that to us and we're like, nah, but, you know, you don't have this and whatever. I was actually explaining to my husband the other day, you got to stop me sometimes because I will talk forever. So I was explaining to my husband the other day about our bathroom. I have those random memory trips. And I think I've said this before on my stories on Instagram, but we ran on tank water, like, which was just rainwater. So we weren't connected to a city supply of water. It was just whatever the rain gave us, that was our supply of water. And then mum, you know, to conserve that, it was just me, her, and my sister. So when we'd have a bath, it would be like no more than half full. Mum would go first when it was really, really hot, and she would literally be in and out because she said that sometimes she would just cloth herself and let us have the bath. And then my sister would go, and then I would go last because I just liked lounging in it, and I had the long, thick, curly hair, and I would literally just lie in there and pretend I was in Auckland. And so our bathroom didn't have a door. It had an old sheet hanging up, so you could see through to the kitchen. And it was only us three anyway, so it didn't matter. But after our bath, we weren't allowed to let it out. We would use a bucket to scoop that water into the toilet if we had to flush the toilet. And then we would also use that water to wash our clothes if we were doing a load of washing, because she's like, we're not using clean drinking water to wash clothes or to flush your shit down a toilet. So we're just going to recycle the bath water. Only flush if it's number twos, if it's number ones. Do you really need toilet paper? Just, you know, everything was just conserving water, because where else were we going to get it from? If we don't know, even though it's New Zealand, we don't know if it's going to rain enough for there to be more water for us later. And we just got so used to it. It was just life. We just knew. So when people came over, I was at the age where I felt shame about it, and I didn't want friends to come over, and I didn't want friends to see the lifestyle that I lived, because by that time I was in high school. So I just, you know, thought it was cool to not be that way.
Yeah.
And even though I would go to some of my friends' houses, and they were poverty too. It's not like, oh, they weren't like our level, but they still had their own struggles. Mm. You know, there were still holes in the walls, and they were still eating noodles, and, you know, their own struggles. I had, on the other hand, like the newest computer, because mum believed in education and trying to keep us in contact with the latest stuff like that, like education wise. So we had a good computer, good internet. We could dub CDs, and it was like really good speed as well. So I always had cool CDs.
Children of today would never understand.
Oh my gosh, it was still dial up. So
get our phone, use the phone.
It really was. So I was like, can you stop? I'm like, mom, I'm nearly finished ripping my CD. But like, I had something like that, and my friends thought it was really cool. Whereas I thought it was cool that they could have a shower, like, you know, something small like that, or they were allowed to flush the toilet whenever they wanted to flush the toilet. And I think my mom realized that too, because she used to be one of my netball coaches, and some of the girls asked to come over, and I was like, oh no, we're real busy doing firewood, or oh no, we're helping to muster some cattle tomorrow, like just make up excuses. And then one of them asked my mom directly, and she's like, yeah, you can come over because you can help. You know, in her words. But I'm like, no, mom, like that's the thing. Don't let them come over and work. Like, they should just stay home. And then I literally heard one of the parents say, oh, I think she's just a bit shame. And I was like,
bloody
hell. And then my mom kind of looked at me, and I could see she felt embarrassed because she realized what they were talking about. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, if you guys are busy, don't worry about it. And she kind of had a little talk to me at home, just telling me, you know, just trying to make me aware that everyone, if they're your real friends and they're your real family, these kind of things don't matter. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like, everyone's just got to do what they got to do. And I'm just like, yeah, nah.
Yeah. Well, that concept's so hard to understand as a kid, because you don't, like, have an overview of, like, how life works. You're just like, this is how I live. This is how I bath. I want to have a shower. Fix it, mum.
Yeah. I wanted a shower so bad. Mm. It was so weird. I was so fixated on these little things and how you would define a good life.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'd go to Auckland, and be stunned that they don't eat fruit and vegetables in the house, or like that's not in the house, or fresh milk and things. And we're like, oh yeah, we have it all the time. Like, we end up freezing it because our cow just finished weaning off this, and you know, we've got all this milk supply now, so what else are we going to do with it? And they're like, oh, you just put it by from the shop. Like,
yeah,
you know, we never had to worry about eggs and pork, and we had a full freezer full of meat because we had beasts and we had a pig, and we would trade with a neighbor, have a pig for a cow kind of thing. So,
bro, that's
it's
crazy.
Just strange.
It's like my dream.
Yeah. That's like the lifestyle. Right? That's the lifestyle people are pursuing now.
I know.
Growing your own food, being self-sufficient, you know, yeah, sharing what you have with your neighbors and stuff. Whereas like back in the day, even I remember, I was like, the only time, I didn't even understand like appreciating anything until like my cousins from Samoa would come over and they'll be like, oh, you guys are so spoiled. Look at all the things you get. Look at all of this. I'm like, but I haven't been to Samoa. I don't know what you guys get.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until we went there, I was like, oh, shit. I'm an ungrateful little bastard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that, yeah, until you go see into someone else's,
yeah,
you know, lives. And you're like, oh, wow. Mm. Okay, yep, cool.
I can understand when you're saying you're going from the Hokianga and then back to Auckland, like school holidays, like having to see different sides so many times in some way.
Mm. And then I always, like, especially now, too, I'm more aware that a holiday is just that. It's just a holiday. Like, that's not their real life every single day. Mm. And they know that we're visiting for a couple of days at that house. So they're going to put on a feed and they're going to let us go do whatever we want for school holidays. Especially now as a parent, I know that.
Yeah.
Like, I got kids. I have kids over for school holidays. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Stay up for 3 a.m. I don't care.
Yeah. Eat all the junk food.
Yeah. Mm. Like, there's stuff there. Just cook it when you're hungry. And like, as a kid, I just think, man, this is so cool. You guys don't need to stack firewood. I'm like, what? You don't need to go and like get a horse from all the way 5 paddocks away and bring them back just to check their shoes and then put them back again. But then they're like, you got a horse? I'm like, yeah, but it's so annoying because I have to like brush her and do all this stuff. Like, I was just mixed up.
What freaked me out about Ness when she took us up north for the first time to Poetinga. Mm. There's all these people riding horses, eh? No bloody saddle on it. I'm like, is this safe? Yeah. Guys, has Ocean Ness been here? But and then Ness would jump on the horse. Just had our baby. I think he was like 1.5 or something.
Yeah. Marcus, I was breastfeeding.
Our middle child. So she was breastfeeding. Bro, so she jumps on the horse and runs it, eh? Yeah. I'm like, bang, and one of her fucking titties pop out when she's trying to stop the horse. I'm like,
you're good?
Babe.
Your titty, babe.
You still look cool, though.
Yeah.
But just how, like, normal it was, like, all I see horses are like on TV and paddocks and stuff.
Yeah.
You got to pay to like ride them.
Yeah.
And seeing these guys just jump on it, I was like, I've never seen my wife do anything like that physical.
Yeah.
Because you're not like a sports person.
Yeah, true.
Isn't it crazy though how if you go back home, you all of a sudden just sink into it like nothing? It doesn't matter how long you've been away. It's just, it kind of just comes back to you.
It's crazy. Like, you're in the car and as soon as you kind of move into, you know, whatever part you're from, it just like, you just switch on straight away.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't even take, I find if I go on a holiday or something here, it takes me a few days, you know, to like switch off. Back home, it's like instant relief.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's beautiful.
You just sink back into it. Yeah. And see, I love, one thing I really miss about back home is everyone waving to each other when they drive past.
Bro, that freaked me out. I was like, why are these people all waving at me?
Yeah.
Right, and then once the first like couple of guys went by, every single...
Yeah.
Yep. Hey.
It's like the one hand.
How's it going?
And then you notice when someone doesn't wave back, you're like, oh, out of town.
Yeah. Right. Huh? Where are they from? So where did you move? Like, did you move from the Hokianga to here?
No, so it was... So all the places that we stayed around the Hokianga were Weka Weka, Omanaya, Rangi Point. We were in and out of Omanaya a lot. Kaihu, Ruawai. Oh no, Ruawai was where Papa was. And Park and I. And then I moved out of home when I was 14, turning 15. My dad's sister. My dad's sister offered to take me in Dunedin. Of all places.
Holy fuck.
Oh,
yay. Here we go.
It was like during a school holiday. Oh my gosh. And during that school holidays, it was like the Christmas school break where I got snapped having a boyfriend. But my mum knew. Like, mum was cool with me having boyfriends and stuff. Like, for her, she's always been I've given you all the stuff that you need to know about safe sex, about not getting pregnant, about this and that. If you don't follow it, like, I don't know what's wrong with you. You're smart kids. You know what to do. And people would ask her, like, oh, where are your daughters? And she's like, oh, one's at her boyfriend's and one's at this place. And, you know, she would get the old side eye, like, mum shame kind of thing. But she's like, my girls know what they're doing. Like, I've already taught them what to do. They're fine. And so moving to Dunedin when I was 14, I wasn't allowed a boyfriend anymore. It was like moving into a strict Ifakasa Samoan household, where Samoan was spoken in the house, where my auntie was a liaison manager for Pacific liaison manager at Otago University. She had a law degree, an arts degree. Like, she's a huge person in the community down there, as well as just Samoa in general. Excuse me. And it was only my two cousins there, my cousin Via, who we're like same age group, and she has always been like the pillar of success out of our cousins. Like, if you've got that one cousin that everyone's like, you should be like her, yeah. That's Via. Like, Via's amazing. She now she's a teacher at Avondale College, and she takes Samoan groups, and she's in the community as well, and she's doing tutoring for kids, and she's always looking after her parents. So, like, Via is just the person you want to aspire to be like. Yeah, I was no one like Via. Like, I was the opposite. And even though we were like twin flames, but I was the opposite and just did whatever I wanted. And it was just strange. I just moved into this whole new environment, and Dunedin's so whitewashed, coming from the Hokianga and then going to Dunedin, where it was literally like a ratio of 8 to 2 white to brown people. And then all those change of rules. So I struggled a lot while I was down there, but it was honestly one of the best years that I've learned from, because that's where I got in touch with my Samoan side. Once I got over the shock of all these rules and actually just embraced them and just went with it. I found my love for Siva Samoa, and I read a Kusipaia for the first time. I even got like a Kusipaia, like a Samoan Bible, for an award, because I tried to do the exams that they do at church. So in Ifakasa, they always have like Sunday school exams for the kids, and everyone's so competitive because, you know, your family's pride is on the line kind of thing. Yeah, I sucked, but I got an award at the prize giving because they were like, because you just tried your best and you just did it. And they didn't tell me what my score was, but
that's what they said. You tried your
best. You tried your best. They're like, oh, hey, galo fai. So I got one of those.
You always know the Kusipaias because they're like pink pages on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not like the normal Bibles, because auntie and uncle used to force us to read it. We learned how to like sound the words out and stuff, but man, threatening a kid to read
it's
the
intense,
Bible.
It's intense, eh? Especially when you're trying to, like, hearing Samoan and speaking it and reading it are totally different levels. And I feel like the more Samoans I talk to, some people will say, oh, I'm better at writing in Samoan, or I'm better at speaking it. But as soon as I have to write formally, I don't know what I'm doing. So there's no consistency when it comes to different families and how they, you know, enforce Fa Samoa. But yeah, that was my big takeaway from Dunedin, was I got more in touch with my Samoan side. And then after that, I moved to Taranaki. I finally moved in with my dad, because it was either that or move back home with my mom. And I was like, oh, mom, I love you, but I don't want to go back up north. I like showers and I like, no. I just didn't want to go back up north. I just felt like it wasn't for me. I'd been up for a couple holidays, and it was just sad to see some of my friends who I went through school with still in that same rut. And having no ambition, and even throughout all school, I was hanging out with the naughty kids all the time and, you know, partying and all that kind of stuff, but I still wanted to go places. And I think I'm really thankful that my mom and my dad's family have always been big on education and been big on big plans. And even my dad, he's like, I don't care if you fail school, but just have a plan. Like, if you have a plan and you want to do something and you love it, then I'll support you. But if you just sit there and just go with it, that's not what we raised you to be like. So I moved to Taranaki, in with my dad and my stepmom. How old were you when you moved there? I did my last 2 years of school, so I was 15 turning 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was another culture shock, living in Taranaki, especially moving in with my dad for the first time in years. Like, we'd seen each other a little bit before then because he moved back to New Zealand. I can't remember how old I was when he moved back to New Zealand, and we'd see each other on the odd occasion. But yeah, he remarried to my stepmom, Donna, who I love. She's been in our life since I was about 8 or 9. So she definitely is a second mum to me. And they have 3 boys, my brothers, Duplessis, Paula and Isaiah. And yeah, I moved in with them, and it was, that was another experience because it was a girls' school that I went to. So that was different. I was looking for the boys' toilets the first day. Like, I was like, do they even have boys' toilets here? Or is it 2 girls' toilets? Like, just trying to figure out how it works.
Where the boys at?
Yeah. And I was like, so which boys' school is our brother's school?
Did you find them?
Yeah, I found them. Not keen. and plus, Dad went to a Christian church, which was totally different to going to Efakasa, where it was very, you know, whasamoa.
Structured.
Yeah. And the whole hierarchy thing. Yeah. I guess the best thing about that I learned as well from Efakasa was how to shut up. Mm. Like, you know, just not speaking back and just learning how to hold my tongue and that, just that respect. Because my mum always welcomed dialogue. Like, we were allowed to talk with each other. She didn't tell us to shut up every time we try to answer back. Because I don't think we ever answered back in a way that was like, oh, like, shut up, that kind of thing. It was more so just trying to reason with her. Like, she'd be like, come on, we got to go get the horses. And I'd be like, or I can say, why don't I stay and cook the lunch? And you and her go, or you and my sister Larissa go, and I'll stay back and do this, and I'll clean, and I'll do this. And she's like, yeah, nah, get out. Like, we're going. Whereas if I try that with my dad or my, like, my Samoan side, they're like, what? Like, straight away, it's not the, oh, they're like, sorry.
Like, did you just answer
yeah.
back?
Did you say something? Yeah, so, and then moving with my dad was very similar. My dad is pretty much like the head of our family because when his dad passed away, it's just him and his oldest sister are the oldest. So he's the oldest boy, and he basically brought his family over to New Zealand, which was his dad's dream. So his dad passed away when my dad was only 11. And yeah, my dad's just this champion, honestly. He's such a superhero. And both of my parents are. Like, my mum raised me and she's amazing. And I think a lot of people are taken back when they realize how much me and my dad weren't together growing up and how much I still adore the heck out of him and still say that he's this amazing person, because they're like, but he wasn't there. I was like, well, that doesn't matter, because the times that he was there are really, really, really good. And when he wasn't there, I had my mom and she had my back. And it wasn't like I felt like he was missing and I resent him for that. I felt like we did pretty good without him. Mm. And when we did get back into each other's lives, it was even better. So, yeah, I don't know. Some people do bring it up and say things like, yeah, but your dad wasn't there to do this. And I was like, yeah, like, that's okay. I don't hold it against him for that, because he was probably just trying to find himself, or – you know, he did remarry and start a new family. But I know for sure that he still prayed for me and my sister and raised my brothers to love me and my sister like their sisters. So I've never felt a disconnect from him with that distance. So yeah, moving in with him was different, because all of a sudden I'm 16 and living with him, and him and my mom had a disagreement because I was on contraception. And he's like, if she's on contraception, you're encouraging her to have sex.
That one.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom's like, no, she's on contraception, so she doesn't get pregnant. That's it. Like, that's just it. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure I stayed on it. And what happened? My first year living with my dad, I was textbook good Christian schoolgirl. I got saved, baptized. I helped out in the youth groups and was a youth leader for a while and had great grades at school. And I was in the Kapaka group and I played basketball for the church, and I started a Samoan group at school as well. yeah, I was a great student. And then Christmas holidays, I went back home and just got sick of it. And then I went back for my last year of school and I just wasn't a great person anymore and just wanted to live a double life and would sneak, you know, two different places, or I'd have a boyfriend from church. And it was just like I just got sick of the charade. And as much as I loved being a part of the church, I just didn't feel like, I just didn't have the energy to keep up with it. And I just didn't feel happy. And I just focused on school and passed school with great colors. Like, school was great. I got scholarships at the end of school, and I got multiple scholarships at the end of school, and I had a choice of universities. I didn't want to go to university. I wanted a break. Like, I'd studied so hard and felt like I was just this person that everyone wanted me to be. And then I was like, no, I just want a break. Like, I don't want to go to school. I want to work, or I want to do something else, and I just want to do my own thing for a year and then I'll go uni. But because I had all these scholarships, it was kind of pushed that, well, if you do that, you're going to miss out on your scholarships. So I ended up going to Waikato University and pretty much drank the whole year.
What did you study?
Bro, hold on. I've always dreamed of that, eh? Like, when all these kids would go to uni and have these massive parties and stuff, I was like,
I wonder what the ratio is, like the percentage of people who actually pass, because I did not pass that year. That year was free. Yeah. And because my accommodation, so I lived in the dorm, I think, for two semesters, and then I moved out and went flatting. My mom really wanted me to stay in the dorm because she's like, I'll even help pay for it. I don't know how. My mom paid for a lot of stuff for me growing up. Like I said, I'm pretty sure it was legal.
Allegedly. We use allegedly around here.
Yeah. Allegedly legal. Yeah, she just found a way. And so she's like, if you stay at the hostel, I will pay for your rent there and you can use your student allowance for spending money. You've sought your scholarship. Don't be stupid and move out. And then I was like, I'm moving out. And so I went flatting, still failed. I was like, this is going to be better because then I'm in a home and I went flatting with my cousin, which was a bad idea because then we got in a big dispute about an overdue phone bill, which was under her name. Yeah, don't flat with family. Yeah, it was crazy, school. And then, yeah, I didn't pass. But I was studying economics and social development, I'm pretty sure. Oh, Māori and Pacific development.
Okay.
And economics. And then in my second year / second time first year, I changed to social policy and Māori and Pacific development because economics I excelled in at school. I just loved the whole push-pull effect on like supply, demand, unemployment, employment, and how all these things trickle down into the economy. That fascinated me in social sciences. So at uni, I was like, oh, that's what I want to do. Like, I just want to get into the communities and I want to help people and I want our people to break free of all these cycles, because I'd lived in so many places and seen so many variations of poverty and the way that people were coping with it and the way people didn't value education, or not education, textbook education, but any kind of education, that they felt like, this is it, this is me forever, there's no point like trying to do anything else, or there's no point going anywhere else because this is us. And I didn't understand that. And I really wanted to find out why people did that. So I tried to study it and then I failed because I kept drinking. And I just found reasons and excuses on why I wasn't passing. Like, oh, see, this is why I wanted a gap year. This is why I should have stayed single. Like, all these things. And I end up just giving up completely and saying, like, this just isn't working. I feel like I need to come back later. I'm just going to go work. And so I end up working. I moved to Auckland. And, yeah, with Leo and just – well, Leo's my husband. He's amazing. He's pretty hot. He's pretty bulky. And, yeah, we met, and it was hilarious because I've known him for years. He is one of the really good friends of my cousin and her husband. And I, on my random trip up that I'd drive up to Auckland from Hamilton, called into their house and they're like, oh, we're going to Leo's 21st. Do you remember Leo? And I'm like, nah, but okay, like scab some clothes when we could all fit each other's clothes and went down to his house and yeah, saw him there and he saw me and we were like checking each other out. He had a girlfriend at the time. but she was a dick. I'll be straight up.
One out, Steve.
She was a dick. I wanted to one out her. Yeah, so my first time meeting his girlfriend. So it's his 21st and she showed up, like we showed up late and then she came not long after us. And I was like, oh, did you like go home to get dressed or something? Just assuming that she'd been here earlier helping out. And she goes, nah, I just got here. Like casual. Mm. And that was me and my cousin like side-eyeing each other like.
That's the girlfriend.
Like, oh. And then trying to still make polite conversation, eating the food, like all the nice island food. We're like, the food's mean, eh? And she's like, oh, I've had better. And we're like, still side-eyeing each other like, this bitch. And then she kind of got up. She's like, oh, I'm going to go get a drink or I'll see what they've got. And she walked away. And then she turned around. She goes, hey, can you hold my bag? And like, put her bag down. And then I swear, as soon as she walked away, my cousin looked at me and she's like, what a bitch, eh? I was like, yeah. And she goes, it was all good, eh?
I thought you were going to say, as soon as she walked away, we went into her bag and stole all her money.
No. Not like that. I was actually a pushover and I held onto her bag the whole night. No, but my cousin kind of started doing the like, Lil's all good, eh? Like, he's funny, blah, blah, blah. And like, oh, that girl, she's so not a good fit for him, mate. And so she fully planted it in my head. Yeah. And then Lil reckons that night that we were talking and stuff. And then he wasn't really drinking because he was flying to Sydney the next day for his big 21st with his cousins in Sydney. And that when we hugged to say goodbye, he goes, oh, yeah, I'll see you next time. And I was like, and apparently I said, yeah, catch up when you get back.
And that's how you said it?
And I probably was just like, yeah, catch up when you get back. But he was like, but I heard. And he goes, and then when you said it, you were like right in my ear. I was like, oh, my gosh. And he's like, yeah, that's it. That's it.
That's the one.
Yeah. And so he went to Sydney. I think we saw each other about 3 weeks later. Because I'd always make random trips up to Auckland. And yeah, and then we hooked up like 3 weeks later. And that was it. That was the start of our weird and cool love story.
Because you guys been together how long?
12 years this year, yeah, in August.
And you guys been here 12 years? Like, did you move straight here?
No, we moved here in 2012. Oh, so okay. It was like 3 years. Yeah, 3 years in. And then, because when we hooked up, he was still living with his family in Otara. So Leo's upbringing is completely different from mine. It was like pretty much, yeah, straight up Southside boy. Like his dad worked OT. His mom stayed home with the kids. And when she finally went to work, she worked OT as well. And he was almost the head of the house for a while. And just this normal, typical Samoan boy upbringing in Otara. Very macho. And I think it was lucky that he loved footy because then he didn't get involved too heavy in like the gang stuff. And so even though he'd throw up, like his little crew had their own crew and stuff. But because he played footy, he got a pass with a lot of the different crews. I'm just glad he wasn't into it. So when we hooked up, he still threw around his red rag, but it was like, it was like in a cool way. It was in a way where I was like, I was like, you're so tough. You're so ghetto.
Do the dance, babe. Do the dance. Yeah, that one.
Can you do the sea walk? Yeah, so and moving to Otara, so when we finally moved in with each other, I moved to Auckland first. He said it was for him. I disagree. We moved to Auckland and then eventually moved in with each other. And yeah, it was just a whole new experience in that as well, just living with his family and being with this guy who was very alpha and very dominant and very much a, this is my way and that's it. Like, I don't want to hear it. And I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, you got to hear it. No, you need to hear it. Like, I don't care if you don't like it. You just need to hear my side of the story. So he's known right from the start that, so he was buzzing out because I talked a lot. And then he also buzzed out that I was happy all the time. Like, that was one thing I remember him asking me. He's like, why are you always smiling? I was like, why not? I don't get it. Like, why wouldn't I smile? Isn't that a good thing? And he's like, well, yeah, but I just don't get how you can smile all the time. And that really stuck with me, like how that was a weird thing that someone was happy. like genuinely happy, or someone made the effort to smile. And it's not really said that whenever I used to walk around Otara, I was like, oh my gosh, no one smiles.
Yeah. Like, you can't trust someone with a smile. Like, because I grew up in Otara once.
Well, yeah. Like,
don't trust that person.
Legit. People would look at me weird all the time. And I feel like it was like, the fuck is she smiling at?
Yeah,
and I'd just be like, morning.
But even like walking around the malls and stuff, like Manukau Mall, like you don't make eye contact with people, because if you do, it's like, oh, what? You're looking at me?
Yeah,
and
you're like, good? Oh,
okay.
Legit. And so when Leo used to come visit me in Hamilton, I used to laugh all the time and be like, all right, relax your shoulders. Like, you're all right. And he's just like, nah, you just never know, you know? Like, he was just always on the lookout.
It would have been so different for him. Like,
yeah.
I guess, like, anywhere that apart from Auckland.
Yeah.
I remember moving out of South Auckland. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand it.
And then people do the same to you. They're like, what's up with this guy?
He's so, like,
high strung.
Why
doesn't he
talk? But you walk around with your shoulders, like, up towards your ears. Like,
yeah,
yeah, but Leo's got no neck. So.
And he's got this like permanent scowl face. And even introducing him to family and friends, the confident ones would always say to me, they're like, is he all right? Like, is he angry? I was like, oh, no, that's his face. Like, he's actually really cool. He's funny, like all that stuff. And so in photos, especially if you catch us off guard, I feel like my resting face is either confused or smiling. Like, just by default, and his is just the angry face. So I love when people get, like, candid photos of us, because you just see the contrast. We're just so different. Well, at least in resting face. And, yeah, and then one day Leo just said to me, and he goes, how do you feel about moving to Oz? And I'd been trying to convince him to move out of home for a long time, mainly because of that power struggle between him and his dad, you know, like, with Leo being the oldest in the house and with his dad being the actual man of the house. I think I chopped his balls one time and I was like, you know, this isn't your house. You're not the man of the house, right?
And he's like, why am I with you again?
He's like, what'd you say? And I was like, you heard? Bedside, I'm like, fuck. Sometimes you shut up, man. Yeah. And so I think that really hit home for him, because there was a lot of things happening. And, like, little things happening where things got eaten too fast, or someone was missing school or something, and Leo would try and, you know, be the authority figure and, you know, control the situation. And then come the weekend when his dad's off, would then make the calls as well. His dad would make calls and it would be totally different. And just, there was just that power struggle. And I was just the smiling moldy in between. Just trying to be the peacemaker between everyone. So, yeah, when he said, how do you feel about moving to Oz? I was like, yo, let's go. Like, I was so keen just to get out. I'd been so used to being independent for so long and living, you know, my own way. So I was excited for him more than anything. I was like, you're going to love it. We're going to be, like, in our own place and you can do whatever you want. Like, you already do that, but it's your house. And so we moved to Brisbane in 2012. We just missed the floods in Goodna.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, another big shock.
Yeah, so the weather over here is insane.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we moved to Brisbane.
Especially from, bro, you've moved everywhere though. Like,
yeah.
Come on, bro. But I, like, it still shocks me that you went from Hokianga to Dunedin.
I know.
Like, that's such a huge contrast.
Yeah.
So since you've been here, have you always, like, done radio? Because we've only been up here a couple of years, only connected, like, for not very long.
Mm.
Has this always been your work?
No. Like, okay. I think my mom actually said to me years ago that she thinks I should go onto radio. And I kind of laughed and I was like, are you saying I'm too ugly for TV? But, yeah, and I kind of just let that pass. And I've always been, especially in my Māori family, I'm one of the oldest cousins. And I'm not the oldest, but when it comes to leadership roles, I'm the cousin that gets all the leadership roles. And mum's the oldest and her siblings. So it kind of is a natural flow and effect. But it's funny because then I end up telling the siblings what to do all the time. And mum. Because mum's the kind of sibling in the chat group where she just leaves the group because she's just hoha with everything in there. Oh, so she's like, well, do what you want then. And she just leaves. And then the rest of them kind of talk. And then the youngest, who I'm really close to, she'll message me and she's like, babe. This is happening. Like, I don't know what's happening with your mom. And yeah, I'll help to kind of piece things together. But anyway, back to your question. So when I moved over here, I was hired out into medical administration. So I got a job in Auckland as a medical receptionist, and I was doing that for years. And over here in Brisbane, I worked at a private practice in the city, GP, and I worked my way up to practice manager for a little bit. And then I stopped after a while because I just got sick of it. There was some political stuff happening with staff as well. I worked at the MARTA for a bit, and then now I'm working at a place called Genie, and it's a medical software. So still in the medical field, but at least this time I'm on like technical support. So if their software goes down or if they don't know how to do something, then they'll give us a call and we help talk them through it. So yeah, I like it. It's crazy. Like it's a bit stressful because it's still a call center environment. So you're on the phone a lot and it can feel a bit high pressure because if you've got a doctor ringing you and the receptionist in the background and they're stressing out because they've got five patients waiting and the doctor's got surgery soon and the computer's crashed and they're waiting on you to fix it right there and then, like it can feel like a lot of pressure, but I thrive under pressure. Mm. I like chaos and I like the pressure. So, this job is perfect for me.
Because you're working from, like, you're doing that from home, like, you know, and then you're doing the radio as well.
Yeah.
And you're a mom.
Yeah.
And you're also, like, you put yourself out in the community, not only working, but just doing your thing.
Mm-hmm.
How?
Yeah. I don't know.
Have you always been, like, one of these people who can just be involved in so many things at once?
I feel like I have been. I'm definitely someone who's always willing to help. And I think I got that from mum with her just right from the beginning, going out of her way to help people. Even though we had nothing, it was like she would still find a way to help them as well. It brings me joy helping others when I've been through so much stuff. I don't realize that people are just going through it for the first time in their 20s. Or their 30s, and I'm like, oh girl, I was there on my when I was 17. Mm. And I was like, trust me, you're gonna get through it, and you know, help them through these situations. But in the community itself, I think being part of Ifakasa really helped as well. And then also being in New Plymouth, part of that church community, it just helped foster that realization that there are other people out there who do need your help as well. And people who just don't have a voice. I talk so much and I don't mind making mistakes in front of a large group of people or in front of a small group of people. So me putting my hand up has happened for a long time. Yeah, like even in classroom situations, I'll always answer and not be afraid of getting it wrong. Like I'd usually start off with, I don't know if this is right, but like and just say it. 'Cause mum, especially mum's family, always taught us like shy people miss out. Yeah, just say it. Shy people miss out, especially food. You know, like if you don't say yes and you just sit there like secretly hoping they ask you five more times, you're just gonna miss out. Yeah.
That's what I like. How was hard to understand. Like when Māori people would come over, you're like, you know, hungry? Yep, sweeters. And they'll come grab a plate. And then islanders would come, like Samoans. You're like, are you hungry? No, no, no. And I'll just be like, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you sitting there not eating? I was like, you have to go and give them food. Like, it's almost a way to be polite. And in my head, I was like, bro, fuck, make your own plate.
I know. You're like, how many times have you been?
Yeah, cool. I love your culture, but fuck, bro.
Yeah.
Growing up, like when people would come over, I'd be like, oh, do you want a drink? Do you want anything? And they'll say no. And I'd be like, oh, good, I'll walk off. And my dad would be like, hey, get the drink. I'm like, yeah. What do you mean? But they said no. He's like, it doesn't matter what they say. Just get the drink. And I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Is that a humility thing? Like what?
Yeah.
Hospitality.
Okay. Yeah.
You don't say anything. You just provide it. Even if they don't eat it, you just pressure. Yeah. Peer pressure.
Yeah. It is.
But then
you see it. You see it in a lot of like, in Samoan cats, when they come over and stuff, they're very like awkward at first because they're inside like your living space. And then you gradually, you've got to get, you know, break them down, come, let's go outside, let's go do this, let's go do that. You've got to come up with the ideas and then eventually, you know, they let it, you know.
Yeah.
They chill out, relax, and they want to jump in on whatever
it's
you're
like
doing.
They don't take free reign of the house where, no. I don't know, when Māori's coming, bro, it's your house, you whatever, help yourself, you know, sweet as.
Legit, like even haven't been here ever in my life. And
yeah, I came out of the
food
room
and I was like, in my head, I'm like, I know where the kitchen is. I can get a plate. I can do this. I could do that. I was like, where's the butter?
Is that Māori bread?
Yeah. I was like, is that takako? And he goes, Māori bread. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I've, yeah, and because I've been brought up that way, is that you just make yourself at home. Mm-hmm. And the way I act is the way that I want people to act with me. And sometimes people don't get that. So so I try and make myself comfortable in their space. Mm. So hopefully they feel comfortable as well. Mm. Like even with the sex chats and stuff, I'm jumping around subjects. It's the same thing. Like I will usually try and share to try and break through to be like, see, I'm being vulnerable. Mm. Like you can too if you want. And they usually do, which is nice. Yeah. Mm. I'm like, here's some of my pie.
What made you start the Monday? Because so every Monday night, Kimaya has a Monday night sex chat, and it's you only put it up on Monday night and everything gets deleted the next day, which I love. I think it's a really cool way to create a safe space for something that many of us are like uncomfortable to engage with, especially in the like Pacific and Māori community. But like, what made you start it? Were you like, this is a good idea?
It wasn't even going to be a thing. I've always, especially on my unfiltered page, just said random stuff. Like if you look at one day of my stories, it's so all over the place because my brain's just all over the place. And because I've always been very open talking about sex and like anything to do with sex, I'm always the cousin or the friend that people will feel comfortable asking me questions about, knowing that I won't judge them or pull a weird face like, gross. Yep. You did it where? Like for me, I'm just like, oh, get it. And then like encourage and do stuff. Because like for me personally, one of my love languages is physical touch. So and I'm lucky that both me and Leo are the same. So we're on that same buzz. And like it's very important for us, sex in a relationship. And so when I hear other people, it's not important. And not by choice, just because they don't communicate or because they just don't know how. Especially with each other, it just makes me sad. And I'm like, no, I want you to have what I have. It's amazing. Trust me. Try this. Some of my pie. Yeah. Try this on your pie. Yeah. And Leo's been, in the beginning, Leo's very reserved. He doesn't like social media very much. He hardly posts and he knows that I'm always on it because I love speaking and sharing. It's such an effective way to do that. And for him, he's just like, you do your thing, whatever. And so he's just gradually over time been more comfortable with me sharing things. Sometimes I'll look at him and be like, can I share this? And he's like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'll try to find an alternative. Like, what about if you talk about something? So I did. I brought him on one time. I think I shared some stories with him one time. And I was like, can I do your face? And he's like, no. And I was like, okay, I'll do my face, but you talk. And he's like, okay. So I'm like, just trying to find some middle ground to get him involved. But yeah, I think I asked the question. It all started because I asked the question, it was a poll on, do you feel comfortable being naked in front of your partner? And it was just a random question because I've always been comfortable in front of Leo. Like I've never felt shame or never felt like he's going to be grossed out or never felt like it was something wrong, even in our early stages. And I guess because right from the start, he's just treated it like it was normal, that it's just become a normal thing. So when I randomly thought about it one day and asked people and I said, oh, this is going to be weird. I don't know if people are going to answer, but I'm going to do some polls because I'm genuinely interested to see, you know, how you guys operate in your relationships. And the first one was, yeah, do you feel comfortable being naked in front of your partner? And if a lot of people reply back like, oh, only with the lights off or like, no, I'd say out of 100, if I was to remember the percentage, it was really, really, really low. Like I'd say 20 out of 100 people were saying that they were okay with being naked in front of their partner. And then that made me kind of delve into more questions, like especially for married couples, how often do you guys have sex a week or like a year? Because some of them would say it was maybe on their birthdays or which I'm like, oh,
once a year,
you only have one birthday, you know, stuff like that. And it just blew my mind. Well, people just didn't know stuff like what I thought was very, like you should just know this from being a teenager that you pee after sex because you don't want to get a UTI. And people were like, what's a UTI? Gross. Like it's just a urine infection. Like it's not gross. If anything, it sucks, but it's not gross. And you didn't know that. Like, did you guys do sex ed or did you talk to your parents or Yeah, you know, and so a lot of these questions came out because I noticed that it was all polys. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of shame in our culture when we do bring up things like that, because I guess we don't really have the examples to look up to where they would explain and break things down to us. I mean, for them, they would have been busy as hell.
Mm.
You know, for them and with the church and everything, you kind of understand why they wouldn't really bring that kind of thing up to you. Like, I remember speaking to my dad about it.
Mm.
And he was just like, make sure you don't waste it. I'm like, oh, waste what?
Yeah.
What am I wasting?
Yes, dad.
And got her pregnant.
Yeah. I didn't waste it. No, not like that. We're like, oh, do you mean, oh. What? You got to be specific on where the wasting is.
But it's so common. But I find, like, when I was growing up, hanging out with the boys, fuck the shit that would come flying out your mouth, not only around the boys, but to, like, other females when you're drunk or when you're interacting with them.
Mm.
You're so brave and stuff. But then, like, in everyday life, it's like, fuck, you didn't, like, I wouldn't even make eye contact with girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because I was always so confident talking to people, and would have those situations, like as a teenager and as an adult, having these single friends and then wanting to hook up with other people, I'm like, well, just go. They're like, oh, nah. Nah, all good, because I already hooked up with two people. okay, yeah, cool, got it. Yeah, so that's how it started. And because I realized it was polys, and because I had that little background of being at Efakasa, I saw firsthand, like I was only 14, 15, but I was already like, you know, not a virgin by then. So for me, I'd been through a lot of experiences already. Mm. And to know that a lot of my cousins or friends and youth at the church hadn't been kissed yet, and they were adults and stuff. So I just felt... I felt like I was already so far ahead, but not really by choice. It was just the environment that I grew up in. It was normal for kids my age to be having sex and to be going to parties and hooking up with each other and doing drugs and drinking and then going to school, you know, and having pregnant cousins that were still in school, and very normal. And then I'd go to other places and they're like, yeah, that's not normal.
Yeah. Like in our culture, that's almost seen as like a failure. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, they already got one and it's another one coming. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Is it bad to have like kids to different men? What the fuck's going on here?
Yeah.
It's not until down the when you have your own kids, you're like, oh, this doesn't mean shit. It's just about how I treat that kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's like a lot of shame attached to it growing up, but that like Puritan virgin shit that you like hear about growing up.
Heck yeah.
Bro, especially in Samoan Tongan cultures, it's insane like the level that it's at where people won't even attempt like a conversation.
Yeah.
Because they know what's going to happen, you know, they're going to get in trouble. There's going to be shame involved.
Mm.
And I guess that's why your Monday night thing's so successful, because people get an outlet, whereas usually, you know, there's no one really to talk to.
Yeah. Mm. And even amongst each other, like with couples, that I've even asked questions like, can you talk openly about sex with your partner? And it's surprising the amount of people that have voted no, which is strange, because you'd think your partner would be your best friend, like cliche as it is. But
you think, and then once you see someone else, you're like, oh shit, like there's a completely different normal out there.
Yeah. Or even like the parties where they're like, oh no, we can't drink together. You're like, oh. Really? Like those kind of couples where they're like, oh, no, we don't drink together. Oh. Like, nah, because then we always end up arguing. I'm like, oh.
Fair enough.
I get it.
Yeah, and I'm like, stoke.
Boring.
We're good. Oh, can you watch our kids? I'm like, okay, yours over driving.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I've always been very big on, if you're my person, you're my person. I'm going to give you 100% of everything. I'm going to be loyal. And because... especially in the field of work that I'm in with radio and like in the community, the majority of people in music are male, and they're all like rappers or, you know, musicians. So they've already got a stereotype associated with them that, oh, she hangs out with rappers all the time. And I'm like, have you seen these rappers? No. Yeah. And I don't know, because I'm
so today.
Older than, yeah. Dan's not a rapper. Yeah, if you've seen them and you've heard them, like, I think the way that I approach people, especially men, is I always drop something in about my husband. It's just the habit. And I've made it a conscious habit that I will mention something about my husband in a conversation if it's with a guy. Like, oh yeah, cool, how have you been? How are the kids and stuff? Oh, like, I heard your new song, cool. Yeah, hubby was playing it the other day. Like, just something, because it's, I really want to safeguard my relationship with my husband, and I really want to, I want the world to know that I am married. And even if they weren't even thinking that for a second, I've put it forward first, that I have a husband and I talk about him, kind of thing. And this isn't one of those kind of conversations, bro. And bro, yeah. Brother gets dropped a lot, because I just don't want to risk anything. I don't want their partners or their wives to get the wrong idea as well. So I make an effort to add wives and partners on Instagram if I'm talking to an artist, or if we start connecting for an event and stuff. It's just like, oh, how's your wife? You know, like, this isn't a secret. Like, we're adults, and this is business. This is us doing something for the community, or this is us doing something for your career. This isn't a conversation between one and two. It's like, it's bigger than that, and your family's involved in this too. Yeah, so I just want to protect myself, my relationship, and also the boys. You know, I don't want, if anything, I want to protect their career too. I don't want any kind of random scandals happening. What a stink scandal, by the way.
But that's just so, that's just so common nowadays with social media.
What up?
I mean, you
that
pick like the stinkest photo too.
Getting to like,
yeah, it would be one of my workout photos. Or my cool photo with Dane. I was just like,
my top guy.
Yeah, my top guy photo.
But that, yeah, it's so common in social media nowadays, just the whole like screenshotting. Oh, I got you, I got you. Everybody, look, I got you. I got this person. This person's there.
Yeah.
It's like this weird manipulation. Before, like, people would do it face to face and kind of thing, they'll try and like influence people to affect you.
Yeah.
Whereas nowadays, fuck, you can just screenshot anything and be like, look at what they've been saying. Look at what they've been saying. Like, the conversation doesn't really happen face to face anymore. And if it does, it's probably dangerous.
And then all create a fake profile
and
troll people and share things about people online.
I just had one this week. A fake profile, like, became my friend on Instagram.
And blocked them.
And then the boys were like, oh, check the story. And the story was about a guy I trained with had beaten his missus.
Oh.
And it's just like screenshot after screenshot.
I'm oh my gosh.
What the fuck did you add all of us for? But
yeah.
I mean, like, that's that sneaky manipulation. Like,
yeah.
It may not even be true. But if you put enough of it behind it with the social media thing, you share it to the right people, it becomes true.
Yeah.
And that's how you view that person going forward.
Yeah. Really. And I've had one of those too, where like someone I trained with, someone created an account and shared like, this guy did this and this and this, like share it across to everyone else. I was like, firstly, you should just be talking to the police. And if you are talking to the police, then you shouldn't be doing this, because it's just going to ruin your case. And I just blocked them, because I was like, I'm not going to like... Gossip. I'm too busy to do this. It's like, I don't want to do this. No.
I think it's cool how you not hold yourself, but you almost create like a safe space for yourself. So it's like cool, like, you know, great for the rappers or great for their partners or your family, but also like me and myself first and my family. And this is what feels comfortable to me. You know, like the language you're using and bro, because I understand that to some degree, you know, like same thing when you interact with males, there's sort of a, cool bro, he's the boundary, like just having a chat.
Boundaries.
We're just having a chat, bro. Yeah. Like, they need to go any further.
So when she's nice to people, guys take it the wrong way.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm the husband, hey. Yeah. Hey, fuck it.
And cause like, and you know what it is too? It's the banter.
Yeah. Like, you guys get that. But you guys get that banter though.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, I knew that straight away from you. I was like, oh, hello.
Yeah,
like, you get it.
Yeah.
Because me and my sister are the same. The only difference between me and my sister is she's got straight teeth and she's like half my size. And she's got straight hair too. But with her, and we crack up because she's recently single, because she's like me, very alpha, but we also need alphas who, you know, will challenge us. Yeah, and she didn't have an alpha, Galofai. So anyway, she got herself into a situation where a friend has caught feels, and she goes, oh, it's just really hard because, you know, the feeling, like, we talk about sports and we joke and we get the dark humor and, you know, we can handle all the sex jokes and we can handle all the like just all that kind of boy talk and still take it and give it back. And they like it and they get the wrong idea. And we can still listen and have a heart to heart and, you know, make them feel good about themselves. And then they're like, fuck, I love her.
But I think for a lot of those guys, like, they've never had a female pay that kind of attention to them. So they're like, what the fuck? She wants to marry me.
Yeah.
She wants to fuck me.
Okay, she gets my joke.
Yeah. I think it's because you can hold yourself rather than paying attention. Mm. It's like, cool, you be you, I be me. And then part ways, like, see you later. And they're, like, still following. You're like, bro. Yeah.
We said goodbye. Go.
But that must be like not a hard industry, but like one to navigate in some way, because you are a woman and you're a Pacific Māori woman, and like how confident you are and how you express yourself. And then you're also involved in community and church. Like, you wear so many different masks or hats, hats.
But you're like transparent with all of them. Like, you're almost, it's not like you're hiding anything, but you just represent all these different like things in your community, I guess.
What's been able to like keep you anchored or grounded as you move through all these different roles and interact with so many different people and have to show up in so many different ways?
I think just like how you were saying about still staying myself, like not having to swap into a totally different persona for all these different roles, has really helped, because I can show up to different places and still be me the whole time and not have to not have to put on the radio hat and all of a sudden I'm not this person anymore, or put on this hat. It's like I'm just me the whole time. And most of what I bring to the table is pretty much just talking and bringing people together and being able to manage people. And because I like the stress and the chaos and can think clearly, and I'm pretty good at critical thinking, so when shit hits the fan, I do have a good older sister, mum kind of way of handling things. So with the boys, when they panic, it's like, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to do this and this, and you're going to do that and you're going to go there. Cool. And I feel like that's helped me a lot with the boys in terms of them trusting, because I don't make them feel like idiots, and I'll break it down to a level that they can understand and still give them their own feet to stand on. Like, you reckon you want to do this or this? Like, oh, we're going to go this way. I'm like, okay, cool. We'll do this then if we're going to go that way. So I'll still give them some kind of control over it. But yeah, I just don't mind taking the reins. And I think a lot of people like that, that I don't mind stepping up into a role, even if I know no one in the room and I've been invited purely just to watch. I don't mind putting my hand up and being like, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we do it this way? And then everyone's like, oh my God, yes.
See, I'm the guy in the back of the room. I'm the guy in the back of the room going, fuck, look, there's a loudmouth on.
Put your hand down. She already answered like 3 questions.
We can get out of here quickly. Shut up.
I'm totally that person. And I'll always like, for example, Joe for Angasia did an event not long ago, and it was like a mixer for poly businesses. And I showed up and someone asked a question from the crowd. It was something like, I have just moved from Sydney and I see there's so many poly businesses in the room, but I don't know who's who because no one's faces are on their brands. So I didn't realize that she was from Inuotai, or I didn't realize that that person was from this because I only see pictures of your product. How can we change this, or how can we make ourselves more available so people know who we are? And then Joe was struggling to answer it because he's just Joe Whangasi, you know, like everyone knows him, his face and his branding is kind of part of that. So he kind of struggled a bit to answer it. And I looked around and I was like, raised my hand. And because it was a question for the panel, and the panel had kind of dispersed by then, and it was just Joe answering, and he kind of threw it back to the crowd and was like, if there's no more questions, we're just going to wrap things up. And I, in my head, I was like, stop, don't do that. He's wrapping it up. And then I was like, okay, if he asks one more time. And then he says something and he goes, yeah, so if there's no more questions. And I was like, oh, I've got a question. And he gave me the mic and I was like, I don't have a question, but I just thought I'll bother and answer her question if I was on the panel. So
what was your answer? Gave my question. Because that's a good question she gave.
So I said, I have spoken to a lot of people who are afraid to put their face to a brand because they feel like they're not worthy of following. That here is, for example, Inuwatai, that's not them in particular, but as an example, Inuwatai, people want to buy the drink. They don't want to, they don't care about me. I'm boring. Like, they love the product. I just want to focus on the product and I'm going to push the product and shame. Then I've got to get dressed up, or, oh, I don't even have like a cool voice, or what am I going to say? And there's just so many questions around what can I bring to the table? People want my product. And so I explained that I thought the same thing about Brown and Busy, that Brown and Busy should be just Brown and Busy. It shouldn't be my face associated with it. I'm already the face of my makeup business. I already got my face all over Pacific Wave. I already do a lot of other stuff. I want this to be independent from that because I don't want people to feel like they're following Kamaya's Brown and Busy. I want them to follow Brown and Busy and that's it. Like, I'm not even that person. I don't know. I just disassociated myself from it so much that I convinced myself people only want Brown and Busy, not me. And then it hit me that I was like, no, people want a relationship and people like connecting with people. People like people. As much as you say you don't like people,
I love
you like people. Yeah. And people like stories and people like to see behind the scenes when something's made, not by the machine, but they like to see when you're grinding the coconut, and they like to see that your kids helped to bring it in from the car, and they like to see that, you know, all these things that make up you. Because as a business owner myself, I'm like, girl, that's like me. I get my kids to bring it in too, you know, like straight away I've got a connection with you because you're a mom too. And it's like straight away it's like you use your kids too. It's like, and already I feel like, man, I so support this brand because that's me. You know, and I explained it that way when I was answering the question. It was like, people want to, if people like you, they want to support you. So if people already like your stuff and then they learn about you as well, usually it makes them like the brand even more because they get to know you, they get to build a relationship with you, they feel like they know in you and your family or whatever you let them in on it. So I encourage you guys to not compare yourself to Joe. Like, no, you're not Joe. You're not a loud person like Joe. That's Joe's personality. That's not your personality. Not everyone likes Joe's loud mouth. I was like, some people might like your shy, like, little dry jokes. Or, and I was like, just like when I talk all the time, I get so surprised still when people, like, laugh at my stuff. And I'm like, I know I'm funny, but not that funny. Like, you know, people still like it. Or stories that I think are really boring. And then someone will write back this emotional reply, like, girl, you just spoke to me because of this and this. And I was like, it was just my gym workout. Like, I do it every day, but it hit you today for some reason. And people want to relate to normal.
Yeah.
I was like, we don't see enough normal on Instagram and in businesses. But
even before that with TV. But could you relate to anyone on Shortland Street?
Right.
Dr. Ropata?
Not even him. Like, how many doctors in your family? It's crazy.
Yeah.
But now that there's like this social media thing that's going, you pretty much get an insight into like the people that you want to be, that you can relate to, people that live the same, like similar life as you, similar upbringing, or something completely different that you would have never known unless they would have put it on their story and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, what you were saying, I guess being transparent is probably like the best thing about social media, unless you're like a massive cock, then
maybe. Yeah. But some people like that.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I follow heaps of pages.
Yeah. And that's it. And I think that was a big thing that I was trying to encourage. I was like, just be you. Like, stop feeling like you're not enough and stop feeling like no one will like you, because like people will like you for you. And to be honest, if people unfollow you, they weren't meant for you anyway. They weren't meant to be your customers anyway. So that's fine. It's okay to have people unfollow you and to change direction. You're still going to attract other people, and you're going to attract the people that you want to be following you. So, yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And one lady afterwards came up to me and she was really emotional and said she was really touched by it. And I'm like, see, I knew I had to say it. That was for you, girl. I knew someone was going to hear this.
You go. Okay.
Oh, I think social media is like such a strange thing to navigate. Like, there's no guidebook to say this is the way to engage. It's really just a mirror of your own shit. And so anytime something triggers you in some way, or you're comparing yourself, or just shit starts to get weird. And it's so easy to just shit on social media when really it's our engagement with it or how we're feeling.
Mm.
And if it's like, I'm bro, I'm like a massive advocate. I'm like, just speak your truth. Just speak your truth. Bro, do you know how fucking hard it is to speak your truth sometimes? Like, I say that to myself, you know? So it's so easy to say something, but it's, I think with communities like ours, not so much Māori. I think Māori are pretty, like, mouthy and pretty out there.
Mm.
But with the Pacific Island community, there's sort of a way to communicate, I would say.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Like, humility is, like, a massive part of it. Yeah. Like, when you see a page, you're like, oh, this guy ain't humble. Or you see someone that's like, oh, he's not scared to put himself out there, to dress different, to act different. Mm. I'm going to follow this guy around. I think there's still, like, a lot of shame and a lot of pride that people are stuck in where they don't want to show themselves to the world. You know, we're a bit ashamed of, like, the lifestyle we lead or something that we do in our personal life, so we hide that kind of shit.
Well, even, like, what you were saying, if it's a woman, it's totally different as well. It's like, I know I got a lot of shit from family and from outsiders, because when I was a makeup artist and I was traveling, one year in particular I went to Tonga and Sydney and Auckland, like a few international trips for makeup, and it was always like, god, oh, fi, Leo's at home with the kids, and oh, those poor kids, oh, poor Leo, like, and Leo's all good, like, if anything, he was supporting me. I mean, he always laughs because I was like, oh, I'm gonna go to Tonga. I'm going to go Miss Hey Lala. I'm going to do makeup for Priscilla. And he's like, are you asking? Or are you like? And then I was like, no, I'm just checking in that it's okay with you. And he's like, you're going to go anyway. And then that pissed me off because I'm like, no, if you say no, like, we'll talk about it. And then I'll try and convince you no, but I'm not just going to go anyway. And so I went and it was cool. But I got a lot of kickback. It's just that those same murmurs that go around, or those little comments that they say, like, oh, poor Leo, like, these poor kids. I'm like, they're with their dad. They're at school. He's not carrying them on his back, you know, like, all day, every day. Like, they're at school. Yeah. And then he's at work, and then he comes home, and they have dinner and go to sleep. Like, it's okay.
Well, yeah, with social media, it's so easy to throw that shade.
Mm.
Just this little comment, I know this is going to get to them. This is going to get to them. Yeah. Like, there are trolls out there. Like, people do things exactly like that because they can't really carry it out in their everyday life. So they jump on social media, create a fake account, send some shit, comment some stuff, feel better about themselves.
It's not even fake accounts. Sometimes just
an asshole.
Yeah, it's like, fuck, you're a dick. Like, shot for being honest, but
that real bitch auntie who just says stuff and you're like, okay.
Take that muck off your face. You're like, oh, yeah.
I feel like ever since I got card, I don't know if it's an internal thing. I feel like it is still an internal thing. Ever since I got my malu, I was a bit apprehensive in the beginning because I'm like, I feel like people are going to judge me because of the way I speak or the way I do things, because they've got this idea of who you should be when you're God. Like, cover up and you just be a good Samoan wife and just stay home and do this and do
look
that.
After the kids, everyone's kids. Yeah,
nah. I'm like, nah. If anything, I feel like my kids already know who I am as a mum. You know, like they know who I am as a mum, and I know who I am as a mum. I'm not the mum that makes Easter bonnets.
Such a waste of time. No offense if you're that mum.
I know. Which Shot is Robin. Cool. Like, even, and Twy's such a cool mum, like, crafty mum like that, and very hands-on and doesn't forget anything. And I'm like, what? The other day at church we had a bake sale, and I was like, so what do we do? I'm like, do I have to give something? And then they do the baking and the sale, and she's like, yeah, it's a bake sale. I was like, bro, I don't do this shit. I just give money. I'm like, I don't want to spend time cooking. And I was like, so do I have to make it? Like, it's just, I'm not that kind of mom, you know, or even that kind of wife where I stay home and clean and it gives me joy. I'm like, if anything, it irks me.
Why? What's wrong with
like,
you? How dare you?
I'm like, fuck. Honestly, in any time, like, my mother-in-law or someone will come home, because Leo's mom is like spotless clean. Like, there would never be any kind of mess in the house. And you guys sit down, I'll do it. Like, that kind of mom, where I'm like, someone go help her. Someone go help her. And she'll come over to our place, and I thought I cleaned, but it's not clean. And she will, like, clean it. And I don't feel shame, you know, for me. Leo feels shame.
Yeah, bro, I feel shame.
Because, like, that's for him. He's just like, fuck, it's not clean enough. Like, now she's cleaning. You shouldn't have someone in here cleaning your own house. And I'm like, if that makes her happy, then let her clean. What else has she got to do? She's got to stay bored. I'm like, I'm good with it.
I love the way you think. feel like you've given me permission to express that part of myself.
I think Lil hates the way I think.
Yeah, same as this guy.
Like, I'm that guy that does the last. I'm the like, one that does the last minute cleaning when we have visitors. Because I'm like, this shit ain't clean enough. What the hell?
Wait, I'm like, if you're family enough to visit, you're family enough for my mess. Okay, so if you want to help clean, then you help clean. With my sister's the opposite. She's so clean and tidy. So when she visits, really, because of friggin' COVID, she'll clean and she'll even buy us like new appliances because she's like, these are so old and gross. Get yourself a new kettle. I'm like, it works.
I know.
Like, it works. And no one else has hot water in our house, just me. I'm the only one who has a cup of tea. Like, Leo doesn't drink coffee or anything at home. So I'm like, it works. It does the job.
Maybe that's part of your Hokianga upbringing. Nah, I think that's just normal. Like, just to use something until it's done. I don't know. This is the one who purchases new shit all the time. And Gilad's like, where's the other kettle?
It's the most new shit. And throws away the most stuff that she doesn't own.
Just right, give it to the neighbors. Just like, here you go. I love giving stuff to other people. Like, seconds.
Mm.
I'm like, yeah, if it doesn't fit, just throw it out. Because then you're throwing it out, not me.
So true.
Offloading of responsibility.
Yeah, and I'm not a material person. And it's funny because my son is very much like me. So he doesn't care what he wears. It doesn't need to be labeled. He'll wear the same outfit over and over and over again. He's just not concerned at all with his appearance. And I'm pretty much the same. And then my daughter is the opposite. Like, she just wants to be prepped and looking pretty. And she's just very appearance thing. And hubby's kind of the same too, where he'll always go out and he'll make sure he looks tidy, or he'll buy a new hat, or he'll get a new shirt, like, for an event. And I'm just like, what can I recycle? What's in my wardrobe, and can I just do my makeup different? And that's about it. Yeah, we're just so opposite.
I think that's a, like, what I noticed with your family as well, is it's not about appearance, but it's like a taking pride in yourself in some way before you step out of your house. Or
like, comb your hair before you walk out the house, brush your teeth, put something nice on.
Oh, I brush my teeth. Yes, definitely.
I do.
You're like, oh, yeah, same.
Yeah, for me, I've never understood, like, why you need to put shoes on to go get stuff from, like, the supermarket. Or, like, it just doesn't really cross my mind. So when I met you and you were, yeah, like, we'd just go down to the shop and the kids had to, like, comb their hair and shoes. And I was like, bro, fuck, what a waste of time. Like, we're just chewing into time right now. Like,
yeah,
but it was cool to, like, understand. At first I was like, bro, this is dumb. And then I was like, cool, I get it. Like, I see you.
Because you don't want your kids growing up to be whangaelos. You.
Fuck up.
And on that note, yeah, we'll finish up. Thank you, Kimaya, for coming through. Do you have any last words? We've done an hour 20.
Well done. And I feel like we just talked about nothing.
Yeah, cleaning.
Like, everything and nothing.
We went to the Hokianga, we went to Taranaki, went to Dunedin.
I was like, you guys got to direct me because I would just love the whole time.
That's awesome.
Parting words, honestly, and the same thing that I say to a lot of people is just stop holding back. Like, just actually just do it and don't worry about how bad it's going to sound. Like, find someone to be your soundboard and just do it. Do the podcast or do the song or release that video and just give it a go, because we hold ourselves back so much worried about other people. And go watch my Malu documentary.
Yeah, we'll put the links in the notes. Yeah, it's amazing. It's an incredible journey. Yeah. And it's cool to hear you talk. And, like, is it your grandmother?
Yeah.
You're speaking to? Like, that moved me. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, me too. You know, and it's so long because we filmed that that part last year in, November or October. So watching it, I watched it for the first time a week before we released it. And I was like, oh, that's right. Like, I'd forgotten so much of what we'd already prepared. So yeah, I'm so glad. I've had a lot of positive responses back about it, and especially from the people who I've really wanted to touch, which are Afkasis or Samoans who feel like they're not worthy because they don't speak Samoan, or they're not worthy because they were born and bred in Australia and have never been to Samoa before, and that means that they're not worthy to, you know, receive this. I'm like, according to who? So I'm glad that they watched and they feel this new strength inside them to just keep going. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.